White Rocket Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Welcome to the White Rocket Game of Thrones podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you, our great patrons at patreon.com. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined by our regular Game of Thrones podcast co-host, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks, Van. Very excited to be here.
You fired up the dragon and flew on in here at the last second to talk about two amazingly huge Game of Thrones episodes. You don't know what I think about it. I don't know what you think about sort of the last one, because let's just kind of, so that the listeners will know the timeline here. We had our huge football show last week, and so we didn't have a chance to talk about the next to last episode. So tonight, we're going to talk about the next to last and then about the last episode from Sunday night, episodes 6 and 7. And they were possibly two of the biggest, most spectacular, most consequential episodes of the show to date, although I suspect that at least 4 of the final 6 in the next season will be as big or bigger. It's probably fair to say, right? But they were pretty huge, weren't they?
They're big. Budget-wise, dramatic-wise, doesn't mean they were great.
I thought they were great. I thought they were fantastic.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah. John, I got to tell you first that a listener this week referred to us on Twitter as, quote, just two nerds who happen to be on a podcast, unquote. And I thought, you know, that sums it up pretty well. I could put that on my tombstone. Some nerd who happened to be on a podcast.
I will say the same thing I would say in our Auburn podcast, which is that Van and I would be having this conversation anyway.
Right.
The only difference is that we're recording it and putting it on the internet.
That's the only difference.
That's it.
That's about it. Oh, gosh. You know what? I didn't do this, so I'm going to do it now. This is White Rocket Entertainment. Podcast number 289. Okay, I'll just leave it there. There's no point editing it out and moving it around, because this is episode 289. We're closing in on our 300th. I count, when I do that, by the way, I'm counting White Rocket shows and AU Wishbone shows together. Each one separately is on around 150, so they're on almost 300 together. That's pretty cool, huh? You've been on about half.
That's nice.
You've been on about, what, two-thirds of them now, because you've been on all the Wishbones and about a third of the White Rocket ones, so that's not too bad. All right, so I always say, as we get into our discussion tonight, that we welcome emails, tweets, and whatever, and ravens, and other ways of communication that we get from our listeners. So I still haven't set up a White Rocket podcast. I think I have one, but it's not one that's easy to access. So the easiest way to contact us, because we do both shows, is just to email auwishbone, just auwishbone, just one word, at gmail.com. Or on Twitter, we're at Van Allen Plexico and at JK Ringer, because we love to get questions, comments, and so forth. And we've gotten a bunch this week. I certainly have. Hopefully we got some questions tonight, too. So
we got some good questions, so we got to save time for that.
All right. So first up tonight is our season thoughts overall, because season 7 is in the books. Now, you and I started doing this show about, you know, started doing the Game of Thrones part of this series, I believe during season 5, and I don't remember exactly how you felt about it, but I was very unhappy with season 5, and a lot of the things that were happening in it were just downer, with just relentlessly, horrifically negative, horrible, bad stuff with nothing redeeming. And so I put the show on probation, but season six I thought was great last season. It redeemed everything for me. I have felt like season seven, this has been season four of Babylon 5 all over again, where they just cram everything in and it's just pedal to the metal, go, 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 go. I understand some people's issues with that, but I do not share them. I have thoroughly enjoyed it top to bottom, 10, 10, 10. How do you feel about this season overall now that it's over?
I mean, I don't have a problem with the pace and the things happening, events happening really fast, and people getting upset about the time stuff. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. My problems with this season involve characters not acting the way I think they should act.
Okay.
And so we'll get into that. But I really, really enjoyed this last episode, the season finale. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great. Thought there was a ton of great stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But the two episodes before that, Eastwatch, I guess, I didn't love. And the one right before this there was some really good parts of it, but I had some issues with it as well. So big picture, very happy with the season. I'm happy the plot's moving forward. A lot of good stuff happened, you know, if we think about where we were a year ago. So I'm happy with that. Just for a second, at the end of last season, Daenerys was on a ship coming to Westeros, okay, mm-hmm. with her army. You know, they had just retaken Winterfell. So since then, we got, you know, Arya, Jon declared king of the North. We got Arya comes home, Bran comes home. You know, at the end, Sam comes back to the North. Mm-hmm. We got, all the stuff with Jon meeting Daenerys and then going north of the Wall and then going back to King's Landing. Daenerys had some setbacks, but then she had the great mid-season battle, the loot train, you know, where the dragons engaged the baggage food train and routed the Lannister army. I mean, that was a great moment in the show. And then the big battle north of the Wall, where the dragon died, and Jon Snow and them got away. So I think there were a lot of high points and there was a lot of great stuff, but it's the show, the plot, it moved a long way, and we'll get to this particular episode about where things moved. But so for me, that's what I'm excited about. There were some things that kind of bothered me this season about the way specific characters acted, but we'll get into that.
I think, and I think it's a good point, I think that in the first five or six seasons, when they're just adapting the books, right, they are moving at the book's pace because they have a season to adapt more or less a book. And so they're in no particular hurry to get things to a certain point because they're just leisurely adapting a book that's not the last book. But what's happened is, with this season and probably next season, is they suddenly realized they don't have another book in their possession. There's not probably going to be another book in their possession within the next year or so. And if there is, it'll only get them about as far as they already are, just in a different way. Right? In other words, if The Winds of Winter comes out, it probably won't even carry the characters as far as season seven did.
I think it would get to this point, yes. But beyond this, I doubt it.
So they had no choice but to go ahead and figure out, based on whatever he was willing to tell them, whatever George R. R. Martin was willing to tell them, and I don't know how much or how little that was, they had to craft.
Well, I think part of the deal was he had to tell them the deal. He had to tell them.
He didn't know the deal. I don't think
I mean,
he knows.
Whatever he knows, he had to tell them.
Right, but I don't know how much he knows. That's my point. Look, I mean, when I'm writing a novel and I just finished number 16, I could tell if I'm like a third of the way in or halfway in, I could tell you what the second half is going to be. But the likelihood of when I'm finished, the second half matching up what I actually wrote with what I told you months earlier is very, very low. There might be a few touchstones that are the same, but the highway is going to be very different, right? I'm going to tell you, we're driving from New York to California. Along the way, we're going to see the Great Salt Lake and the Grand Canyon. We might see them, but we might go through Minnesota and Montana and then down to Mexico and then back up to Oregon and then back to L.A. So I don't know what he told them. Nobody really knows what he told them or how much or how little. And we don't know how much of the show has adhered to his follow the dotted lines when you're doing a connect the dots. But anyway, my point is they were given 13 episodes to go from wherever they were at the end of season 6 to a satisfying television conclusion.
And I want to stop you there. I think that the number of episodes is their choice.
Okay,
HBO did not determine.
Well, then they were given two seasons. Fine, whatever. They were given two seasons. They were given two they were given a very finite amount of time. It took them 6 years to get everybody dead and mixed up and scattered all over the map, and they were given two seasons to get everybody back.
But if they had told HBO, yeah, we needed one more season to wrap the thing up, is HBO going to say no?
I don't think they wanted to. They're going to move on with their lives and do other things.
No, I agree.
Do you know how little I want to write another Sentinels book right now? After 9? Oh, so, I mean, I will someday, and I love the property. I mean, I hope you all go buy the books. But just right now, I'm kind of burnt out on that. So you can imagine how those guys probably feel. Honestly, given television, we are lucky the thing is finishing. And
yes,
we're getting any kind of ending, honestly. I was telling somebody the other day on Facebook, we are just so spoiled nowadays, all of us. We're so spoiled. People look at the Marvel shows on Netflix and go, well, I didn't like Iron Fist because the fighting wasn't good enough. I'm like, you could have had Captain America with wings glued to his helmet on a motorcycle, all right? You could have had Spider-Man jumping in an LTD to drive across town. We all are right. So spoiled by what we're getting on television now.
We got a million things to talk about with this show. It's good.
Okay. So my point is, I feel like they're doing the best that's humanly possible, and I'm enjoying every second of it. And I understand that they are limited and constrained. They're just hitting the main plot points because they're not free to spend 4 years having Arya wandering around with hot pie and whatever. We got to move on. In other words, we're in Babylon 5 season 4. We're not in Babylon 5 season 3 anymore, for those of you who know what I mean. Everybody, you know, most people like season 3 better. You know why? Because it set everything up. People don't like season 4 as well. You know why? Because it wraps everything up. And when you wrap things up, when you're setting everything up, hope springs eternal for everybody. When you wrap things up, half the audience immediately doesn't like how you wrapped it up, and the other half starts picking nits. You know what I mean? It's a lot easier to have the crowd behind you when you're going up than when you're wrapping it up. Well, let's get into it. Now, the first thing on the agenda, in Beyond the Wall, Episode 6, the big plan was, of course, we don't need to beat that to death, is we're going to go out and we're going to capture a White Walker and bring him back to show Cersei how serious this threat is. Now, we all pretty much saw what was happening coming. Nobody believed Cersei would just flip and go, oh my gosh, you're right, this is a serious threat. That's why I thought it was so interesting that that's the way they went when they do bring the the creature down to meet Cersei, and they cleverly had it on a chain, is you actually, for a second there, did you buy it when she said, you know, I'm convinced we got to do this?
Well, for a half a second, but I never trusted Cersei.
Right.
And to the point that when Tyrion was talking to her, I felt like everybody else ought to leave the city. Like, that's how little I trusted Cersei. Like, I felt like Daenerys and Jon shouldn't be hanging around.
Shouldn't be
city.
Hanging around. No, no.
They should be gone. They should be like, we'll wait for Tyrion on the dragon, you know, like 10 miles offshore.
Like an AWACS just hovering.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's how much I trusted Cersei.
The looking glass plane. He's the looking glass Drogon. I love it.
That's it.
So, yeah, I kept thinking if there's any more wildfire left, it's all underneath this little arena place.
Exactly. You don't know. It's... Why wouldn't she do that?
Right. Right. It's not like she has any scruples about anything.
No.
And then, but then she did say, you know, if John will promise neutrality in the war, then I'll go one-on-one with Danny. And John's like, no, I can't do that on account of Stark, and just, you know, say crap that's honest instead of having any sense of tactical strategy and whatever. Now, I know that they gussied it all up in he's so honorable, he's so dreamy, he's so honest and everything. But I was sitting there like, when he said that, I'm like, just like Ned. And he goes, now I know some of you are thinking he's being just like his father. And I'm like, yes, we are saying that right now. Did you think that about John? How did you react to him saying, you know, I will not go along with this thing that will save us all?
Well, I mean, I knew he was going to do that. That's who he is. There was never a doubt in my mind that he was going to lie or not tell the truth. So as soon as Cersei said it, I knew that's what he was going to do. But also, like, again, even if he had lied, Cersei would have broken the deal. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's that was her plan all along.
Yeah, I think so. Why did she lure Tyrion in to somehow try to convince her if that was her? Or do you think that was her plan all along? Or did she just say, you know what, instead of walking away, I'll pretend to help him and walk away?
Yes, I think that she wanted them to ride away satisfied and take all of their armies north, thinking that the Lannisters are on board and coming to help, instead of leaving a bunch of them behind, viewing the Lannisters as a threat.
And Cersei firmly believes what Rick Moranis told us, which is that evil wins because good is dumb, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about the stupidest plan ever, as you called it. The Magnificent Seven go north. What did you think about the polar bear? We haven't got a chance to talk about the whole thing. There was the bear. And then there was the small party of whites with the campfire, and they capture one. And then, I mean, all right, now here's the question. The point has been raised, was this the Night King's plan all along, and that's why he purposefully sent one of his lieutenants with a bunch of white walkers that had been turned by him, except one? Because, like, if you look at it one way, it's like, oh, it's kind of implausible that only one of them didn't die when John killed the leader. But if you look at it from the standpoint of that was the plan on the evil side, was to include one that wouldn't die, then maybe it's not quite so dumb, or what?
I mean, again, their plan was dumb. If this was the Night King's plan, it's brilliant, and I really respect it, because what was his ultimate goal?
Get the dragon,
and absolutely. He did it.
He almost got two.
The other part is they were standing there while the whole time John and them were standing on that little rock in the frozen lake. They had the spears.
Yeah.
He could have thrown them and killed all of them, but he didn't. He waited until the dragon was there and then killed the dragon.
Wow. Night King's pretty sharp.
I don't know if the whole thing was a setup, like the whole idea, but I know that he purposefully, you know, killed the dragon so and then let them get away so he could take the dragon and knock the wall down. I know he did that.
Yeah. Is that why he threw the spear at Viserion rather than Drogon the first time?
Yes, I think he wanted to knock the wall down, and I think, you know, if he'd killed Viserion, then he'd be standing there fighting Jon Snow and everybody else toe-to-toe with swords and stuff. And this way, they flew away, and he got a dragon he could go knock the wall down with.
Well, he almost killed it, though. Killed Rogan, though. Rogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. He almost got him on the way out. He had a dodge.
That's right.
So, okay. One other question while we're talking about the North and the Wall. Well, a couple, actually. One is, what do you think about the idea that Bran somehow goes back in time and becomes Bran the Builder and builds the wall?
I don't buy any of these. There's theories that Bran is the Night King.
That doesn't make any
There's
sense.
There's theories that Bran caused the Mad King to go mad.
Right, right.
There's theories that he's every important figure in history, and I don't buy any of that. No, I mean, not zero.
Yeah. Okay. The only one that kind of works for me is Bran being Bran the Builder, because at least you could see where he would see the need to build the wall if he went and keep them safe for thousands of years, you know, and say there should be a Stark in Winterfell. That all kind of tracks, but the rest of it. Oh, speaking of Winterfell. All right. I don't want to, I know we're kind of wandering around a little bit, but we don't really have a chronological plan tonight. So we're going to just kind of talk about things that are interesting. I think one of the things that I think is interesting, and I read the first couple of issues of the Game of Thrones comic book. I got them on Comixology on my iPad. They had them for like 99 cents or something. So I got like a whole pack of them for just a couple of bucks. And I had forgotten that they mention in the novel and in the comic, I don't remember on the TV show, they mention that in the tombs beneath Winterfell, you know, where Sansa goes and all that, the dead bodies of all the thousands of years of Starks all have an iron sword laying across their lap. And the question was, does that keep them from being reanimated when the whites come south? And they also mentioned that some of them had been there so long that the sword had rusted completely away and there was nothing covering them. Now, Martin makes a point of saying that. So should we take that to think that the dead will rise up from the crypts beneath Winterfell, except for the ones that have an iron sword on their lap?
I like to think that Winterfell is like protected, like the wall was kind of. Like there's stuff there that keeps the dead within the castle from coming back, but I don't know that. And I don't buy that iron sword thing.
Okay. All right. I just want to run that by you. I think that's pretty cool. So the bear, the story goes allegedly that they've been, the showrunners, Benioff and Weiss, have been trying to put a zombie polar bear in the show for 3 years, and they decided to finally do it. Does that make sense to you? And were you pleased with the bear scene, or were you ready to just get past that to the whites?
It was entertaining. I mean, because of the blowing snow and stuff, it was confusing and you couldn't tell who was getting bitten and thrown around and stuff. I mean, they had these guys with them, the
red shirts,
the red shirt guys, the red tunic. I heard somebody call them the sled shirts.
Yeah.
Which I like, but you know, the wildling guys who are cannon fodder. So I, you know, you couldn't tell who was getting hit, and then the priest got torn up, but then he walked the rest of the way and was okay for a while. But I mean, the bear fight was fine, and the hound, you know, was still scared of fire and didn't approach him. And I thought that was good, but it was entertaining.
So we're pretty sure that the good guys, the Magnificent Seven, whatever we call them, they set that campfire on purpose to lure a little group over, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and it worked. It worked. It couldn't have worked any better. You know, they fought for 5 seconds, killed one dude, and all of them died but one, who they then captured. I mean, it was almost like the script writers were saying, hey, that should easily get them because we got to move on. So a little contrived. And that's kind of what the whole season has been. If there was one, I meant to say this a minute ago, if there's one fault I could find with this season, really, from my perspective, it's that a lot has been contrived. I think on purpose they've had to, but they've had to just move pieces around. In other words, in the previous seasons, the pieces kind of drifted around. It seemed like almost naturally. Whereas this season, you can almost see the hands on the chess pieces moving them where they need to be. And that's kind of like what you were saying against character a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. You're being forced.
Forced, yeah. Into where they need to be rather than where they would go. Like, we need them up above the wall and then a dragon up there. So, hey, let's send them up there for some reason. Well, what could that reason be? Oh, I know, to capture a white. Well, why would they want to capture a white? Well, to change Cersei's mind. Well, it won't work. Well, it doesn't matter. We got to have it. You know what I mean? In other words, the stuff you've got to do, even though it doesn't really track.
That's why I don't believe that plot of the plan will be the same in the books as it was in the TV show.
No, there's no way. In the book, it'll be 200 pages long and be very much more complex and more organic, I think, because he's got the room.
Yes.
He's got the room to let it grow that way. Okay, so we had the big conference at King's Landing. We got to talk about...
I want to say one thing about the expedition north of the wall and the conference at King's Landing. The best part of both of those was the little conversations between the different characters.
Absolutely.
You know, while they're walking. Going north of the wall, the conversations with, you know, like Tormund and the Hound and Gendry and the other guys. And Jon Snow and Jorah, and then walking to King's Landing, you know, Bronn meets Tyrion again, and those conversations were, and the other ones along the way, those conversations were the best.
Yeah, I was going to say, that walk, the King's Landing walk to the arena, I mean, was the parking lot 8 miles from the arena? I got to think that when the ancient first men or whatever used that place, they had to have like a little shuttle bus thing to carry him, like at Six Flags or at Disney, you know? That was a long walk for a TV show like that. I mean, I know they stretched it out so they could have those conversations. I get that. It's contrived. But it's still, I was thinking, you know, this is a show where people go from point A to point Z in one scene, and yet for them to walk 50 feet to the arena is taking 10 minutes. So it's little things like that that make you realize just how they're playing with time so much, you know. But yeah, those conversations were all priceless. And what they show is that when you've had several years, hours upon hours, to get to know characters as if they're real people that you know, then when they actually start ricocheting off each other in conversations in different matchups, like Brienne talks with Jaime, Brienne talks with the Hound. There was a cool bit with Tyrion and Bronn that we hadn't seen in a while, where like they get kind of nasty with each other, and then they don't say anything for a minute, and then Tyrion just kind of reverses course and says, "It's good to see you again." And Bronn's like, "Yeah, it's good to see you too." You know, I mean, it's like they do all their bluster, and then they're like, "Eh, it's good to see you."
But it's also like, that much more than the big plot stuff, that's the stuff that I cared about this season.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff that really meant something to me, you know, was that kind of thing. The conversation between Tormund and the Hound about Brienne, or the conversation, like you're saying, with Brienne trying to talk to Jaime, and that kind of, like, that was worth to me more than almost the big plot stuff, because I really like the characters, and a lot of that is the things we needed the characters to say,
right?
You know, and John's conversation with Thoros Amir when they're north of the Wall about, why am I here, what does this God want with me, and stuff, and that was important.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's just the power of character. It's that character is plot is fine, but if you don't have character, plot's just A to B, B to C. Oh, there was another one I think that's one of the reasons why the Bran stuff this season has been kind of disappointing.
Yes.
Because he was one of the reunions you've been waiting years for, and when he gets there finally, he's Mr. Spock. I mean, I know he looks like Professor X and has Professor X-like powers, but yet he's Mr. Spock. And so you didn't get any of that emotional character stuff from him because he's just a blank. And that's kind of disappointing because, you know, it's because you expect him to be embracing everybody. And they made a plot point out of that. And the way he did the poor Mira particularly was sad, but again, they use that as to define his new character, and that's all well and good, but it was disappointing in a way. So the meetup at King's Landing, one conversation we didn't mention, or we mentioned in passing, was the Clegane Bowl, where for a second there, you know, because it was interesting, there were several moments at the arena where you think somebody's going to throw down.
Yep.
Several people kind of called out other people, notably that rat bastard Euron. He's just a total. I said to my wife, I said, he's the guy in high school that's the big smart aleck, and he thinks he's the cleverest guy in the room, and he's not, and he's just annoying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about the Hound encountering the Mountain? Oh, you look worse than I do.
I think they teased us like all year long. There was in the trailer for this season, there's a shot of the Hound at this arena, like swinging the sword, and you think it's going to be Clegane Bowl, and instead it was him killing the White or whatever. But I did like what he said to his brother, like, you know, this, you know, how it ends for you. And I still think it's coming. I still think they're not going to deprive us of that, that it's going to come and the Hound is going to kill his older brother.
You know, we may not get it in the books, but I think that the TV people know what the people want.
Yes. I think that's one of the things you've seen this season is that they sometimes this season they've thrown the TV masses some meat, you know, like the Gendry rowing joke.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, well, a lot of stuff. Because, well, think about it. Every other season, they'd look at the books, and the books never give you what you want. That's why it's so bittersweet. That's the thing about the books, is that the books tease you and then slap you in the face and say, no soup for you. Whereas this season has said, here's some soup. Here's some really cool soup. Have some more soup, right? And that's so unusual. I think that's partly what has people kind of wrong-footed. We're so used to getting teased and then slapped in the jaw. This season has teased us and then given us a big French kiss, and we're like, whoa, I'm expecting that. And some people are like, oh, I didn't expect to be kissed. I want more slaps in the face, you know. So,
well, but like it's like you said, we're approaching the closure point, and you can't slap you in the face all the way to the end. Sometimes you have to wrap things up.
I don't know if the books are going to do that, if we ever do get any more books. And I do think we're going to get the next one, because I think the next one is probably 80%, 90% done probably at this point, probably. Just my feeling. I think we'll get that one. I don't know if we'll get the last one. If there's one more, right? Allegedly.
Yes.
But I just don't think that's the way he'll go. I don't think he knows where he's going, but I don't think he'll go for moving all the pieces. Like, I can't imagine any situation. Here's a great example. I can't imagine any circumstances where Martin has all of those characters that went north of the wall, A, do that together, and then B, come all the way down to King's Landing together. Like, when they came to King's Landing and they were all still together, the Hound was still with them. In Martin's writing, the Hound would have gone off and gotten involved in some other thing for another book and had to be redeemed again and maybe murdered somebody and the whole, you know, the whole gravedigger thing, he'd have gone through that whole business again. He wouldn't have just hopped on the plane with them and flown down to King's Landing as part of this little group. I just don't see any way. I just don't see Martin writing a chapter where everybody's together like that. I just can't imagine it.
You're right in a way that it made for great TV.
Yeah.
The everybody looking at each other, being on the same stage thing. But you're right. I don't know if he goes there.
It's just not the way he writes. He writes in point-of-view characters, and it's usually not more than two or three main characters in a chapter. Very limited. That's what I think of people. The people that – I've never said this, I don't think, before, but people that don't read the books, the one thing you are missing is that Martin did something – I don't know if he's the first to ever do it, but he's certainly popularized it the biggest – is to have lots of different chapters, each one from a specific limited point of view. That was the thing that originally attracted me to the whole series, was how you had different perspectives every chapter. And that's fairly unusual. Again, I don't think he created it, but it's very unusual. I don't remember anybody doing it the way he's done it here.
Well, and the great thing about it is it gives you very limited view of events in the world. You're not omniscient.
Right.
You know, it's only what this person can physically see.
Right, right. So moving on along, Tyrion goes, all right, so we know they had the big meeting, and as we described it, Cersei says, well, if Jon's not gonna stay neutral, I'm out of here, and she leaves. And Tyrion basically says, I've got to go and talk to her. I'm the only one, and it's the only chance. Otherwise, we did all this for nothing. At that point, as a viewer, I'm sitting there watching this going, we already know you did all this for nothing, so... what's the point, right? I mean, yes,
well, but
you
I
did
think
all
he had
thing.
To try.
He did,
because his reputation is on the line. I mean, he's the one who's came up with this idea and orchestrated it. It got a dragon killed, and you know, and then they go down there, and then it's like no, nothing. So, I think he had to push it, because otherwise he was going to be in hot water.
I think if I were Danny and John at that point when Cersei turned them down, I'd have said, all right, we're putting everything we have against you guys, killing you all, and then we're digging in here against the North, against the White Walkers.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are two options. One is a truce, and the other one is just finish Cersei really fast.
Yeah, I think that's what they should have gone with. Think about this, though. The sooner you take on the White Walkers, the better, because every mile south they go, that's that more many dead people joining their army.
It's true.
Think how big their army would be if it went straight down to King's Landing and nobody stopped it. And they were just killing people along the way and then taking them into their army.
We'll get to that.
All right. What did you think about Tyrion's conversation with Jaime? Anything of note?
I mean, Tyrion's conversation with Cersei, really.
With Cersei. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, with Cersei.
Did you think he was going to die?
There was a moment when I was 50-50 that he might die. There was a moment when I was 80% sure that she was going to have Jaime killed.
Yes.
I really thought he was done. I thought, you know what? She's so gone. She's so far gone. She's so nuts, evil, crazy. And she's got, if she really does have a baby, then he's superfluous now. I mean, she might as well just say, look, I've killed other Lannisters. You're just one more, right? Talk about a fratricidal family.
Yeah, I thought there was a minute where Jaime might try to kill her, and I thought there was a minute where Tyrion might try to kill her.
Yeah. But the mountain was there, so.
But like, Tyrion pours the wine?
I thought if you want to kill Tyrion, just go into a room, put a bottle of wine in it, and poison the wine. You know he's going to go drink it.
I genuinely thought about that when he poured himself a glass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she knows you're coming. I wouldn't touch anything.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but it was all her plan was to lull them into a false sense of security and get them to leave and send all their armies north. But I thought the scene with Jaime leaving her was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was very powerful. And I think his in the books, you know, he's already broken with her.
Right.
And I think the show has kind of kept them together to have them to play off each other. Sure. But I think him breaking with her and going north to help fight was really good. And I really liked that.
Yeah, I agree. She wouldn't have had anybody to play off of once she killed everybody else except Qyburn. I can't ever remember his name. Yeah, she wouldn't have had anybody to talk to but the mountain and that loon, Dr. Frankenstein, as I call him. I just love when they chop the hand off. He's like, ooh, where can I figure out how to, you know, how can I figure out how to do this? This is my next project. You know, he was just looking at that hand like, I've got to do this.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like, everybody else is like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And Qyburn's like, how can I weaponize this?
Yeah. He's like, ooh. You can just see little hearts popping over his head. All right, let's go up to the north. Let's run through the Arya, Sansa, Littlefinger north thing. Now, let me start out, John, with the end. Did you see it playing out? Be honest. Did you see it playing out the way it played out, or did they pull you in with a double switch?
I kind of saw it coming.
Okay. I you're a better man than me. I was shocked. I knew that people had been talking about, you know, listen to other shows and have conversations with friends and stuff. I knew people had been suggesting that it might all be an elaborate ploy by Sansa and Arya. But then I've watched this show and read the books and I thought, no, that would be good. And nothing good ever happens. So this was, again, I don't know that Martin would play it this way. I think, you know what I'm going to say? Let me interrupt myself for 1 second to say, I think that part of the problem for me is I've never read any part of the books where anything good ever happens. It's like where he's gotten left off writing is still stuff going bad. The TV show's gotten to where it turns around and starts getting good again. But in the books, we're still going there. We haven't hit bottom yet in the books. We're still plummeting downward with no breaks in the books. So every time I try to imagine, could this happen in the books? I think no, because this is somewhat good. You know what I mean?
Yes, I get that. But I guess the only way I thought I saw this coming was because I thought that if it came down to some kind of Arya Sansa standoff thing where one of them dies at the end of this, I would have said that was a complete failure of the way their characters are supposed to act. Okay. Now, are they supposed to be lovey-lovey, buddy-buddy, and in perfect sync with each other? No. But the idea that, you know, they would get manipulated like that to the point of killing each other, and maybe they, you know, I think, like, they maybe they started getting pushed down that road, but then they were both smart enough to see through it. And I love the – I hadn't thought about the comparison of their mother and her sister until Sansa said that.
That's right.
And I thought that was a great parallel.
Yes, they did fall for it.
Yes, they did. And Littlefinger manipulated them and pushed them apart and used them against each other and used – you know, his relationship with one to send bad information to the other and get the other one to do bad stuff for him. So I thought he really played off the two of them and used it to his advantage. And this time they weren't going to let him do it.
It totally caught me by surprise because I thought that the way it would play out, I thought that what would happen was that Sansa would be mad at Arya. When she said treason and all that, that kind of surprised me when I still thought she was talking about Arya. I thought she was going to say, you know, you're accused of this, this, and this sort of medium-level crimes or whatever, which I still didn't know what crimes they were accusing her of. I thought she was just going to tell her, get out of, you're no longer welcome in Winterfell. You know, you're a threat to the neighborhood. You're a public menace. Go somewhere else. And Sansa would be like, fine, I don't need your stupid castle anyway. And she would leave. And then we would have to wait until the last season for them to come back together and then finish off, you know, then kind of figure out what happened. I figured the way this show usually goes, the way the story usually goes, they would be separated that way. And then some evidence would come to light that would pull them back together. Now, I think that part of it, looking at it again from the writing standpoint of the show, my theory is, you know, I get a flashing light every time they skip something because I say, okay, they've come to a part where it's really hard to explain how this happens. We just want it to go from A to C. So we're not going to show you B. We're going to set up with A and then give you, boom, the big C reveal.
Yes,
and you don't stop and think about what B was. So,
But there's a lot of B here.
Yeah. So they didn't want to show us. Now, part of it is dramatic presentation. You don't want to play all the thing out because then there's no surprise and it doesn't have any impact. I get that. But there are times you could at least set things up a little bit more, and I think they just don't really want to go into it. It would either take too long or it would be too contrived.
I think it's what you're saying. I think it's the reveal. They don't – I mean, I think what I think of B, I think that like Bran, Sansa, and Arya are sitting together, and Bran goes, I've seen these things that Littlefinger did. Let me tell you about them.
Yeah.
And then they put their information together about, hey, I saw Littlefinger do this, and I saw Littlefinger said this. And then they put all their cards on the table about Littlefinger, and they go, oh, we're going to kill that guy.
But see, that requires that he talked to one of them about that. And then maybe talk to the other about it separately because they wouldn't have all gotten together, I don't think, at that point.
No,
and,
I mean,
and then they make a plan, and it's just a whole lot of stuff that you don't need to show, right?
Yeah, but to me, Bran is the one who could say, "Littlefinger betrayed our father." You know, Littlefinger killed John Arryn. You know, Littlefinger sent the message here from Lysa Arryn, kicking off the war between the Starks and the Lannisters. So, that he's been playing both sides, the back and forth against each other for his benefit the whole time. So I think Bran could have known that stuff. I think Sansa knew a lot of it. So,
well, I saw an interview with the actor that plays Littlefinger, and he made the point of like, he thought that the jig was up way back a couple episodes ago when Bran told him chaos is a ladder.
Yes.
Because it's like there's no way he could have known that unless he knows more. And at that point, Littlefinger should have just said, well, I got to get back to the Vale. See you guys later. Packed up his army and left if he had any sense. So now, who's got the army of the Vale?
Sansa.
But how does she have control of them? I mean, the little boy does, honestly. But are they just answering to Sansa while they're away?
I think they're into the Sansa while they're away, and it's wintertime. They're not going to ride back.
Yeah.
I think while they're there and this big threat to the world is coming. I think they're not going to abandon her.
It's a good thing that there's a Holiday Inn and Suites right next door to Winterfell where armies can always camp out, you know. Apparently there is, because the whole armies, you know, Stannis' army stayed there, and, you know.
I mean, there's a winter town outside of Winterfell, but.
Yeah, they need to go ahead and build a hotel and conference center there, because clearly armies just stop there along the way all the time. But anyway, so yeah, it caught me by surprise. I love how Littlefinger went through like the five stages of denial and grief. You know, he went from
bargaining.
He went, "I'm confused, my lady," to, "No, that's not true," to, "Well, I had to do it," to, "I throw myself on the mercy of the court." You know? He just went from one stage to the other. And I'm like, at this point, when you shift gears so blatantly, don't you think it's pretty obvious? And here's another thing I wanted to run by you. One thing, see if this means something to you. One thing that has come out of this show is it has turned most of the women characters hard. Think about Cersei all the time now, compared to how she was in like the first season when she was just kind of truculent, right? Now she's the stone lady, okay? Think about Dany the last couple of seasons. You know, for a while she was the lost young lady, you know, in strange places. Now she's bend the knee, you know? Just, they get that look, that stone-faced look on their face. Cersei's got it, now Dany's got it, now Sansa's got it, and Arya's even got it. It's almost like iron face woman disease is spreading throughout Westeros, and the cause of it, the vector of it, is people doing mean crap to them.
Well, there was a lot of suffering that led to that.
So. Yeah, and they all show it in their demeanor, their faces, their demeanor. I mean, when was the last time a female character on this show smiled?
Good question.
I can't think of it.
Cersei, when the church blew up last year.
When a whole lot of people innocently died, that was the last time somebody smiled. You're right.
I think you make a good point, but also the other thing is, I think this show has been going on long enough and these character arcs are long enough that I think one of the things I really appreciate about this story is that characters develop.
Yes.
And Cersei was an idiot for a while.
Yep.
And she blames Tyrion for her problems or whatever, but she was the cause of a lot of those problems.
Yep.
You know, she blamed him for killing Tommen. She killed Tommen. You know, she drove away their allies and stuff by being stupid and petty or whatever. And she made the High Septon, the Sparrow guy and all that. So a lot of that was her fault by being stupid. And she's learned she's not going to be stupid like that again. And Sansa's been through horrible things. And she's learned she's not going to do stuff like that. And Dany's been through terrible things. And she's not going to, you know, put herself in a bad position again. So I think some of it is the learning curve.
Well, I think part of it is of the theme of this show is how grief and trials can change you and grow you, but what do you lose in the process?
Yes.
And Arya is the poster child for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you lose as well as what you gain. You, to be a survivor, you have to lose so much of the light. So much of the happiness just to be a rock and survive, and that's sad. But anything else about Arya, Sansa, and Littlefinger? What about the cutting his throat, man? And Sansa didn't even hardly blink at it. You know, I was thinking Sansa's gonna be like, "My gosh, Arya, how did you become?" You know,
no, I think she knows what Arya is, and I think she wanted it to happen. I mean,
yeah, well, I again, did too, but
Littlefinger sold her to Ramsay Bolton, basically, so he deserves whatever he gets.
And he was on Arya's list, wasn't he?
Yes.
Well, check another name off the list. There's not many left. Oh, man. That was very satisfying and good. And I like the Littlefinger actor. Reading that interview with him, I was on Entertainment Weekly's site if people want to go check it out. It is a short interview because they say he doesn't do interviews really and he's very private. But he's really an interesting, thoughtful guy. And he has some really cool things to say about playing that character for so long and going out that way. So I recommend that. It was just out like in the last couple of days on the Entertainment Weekly website. Okay, before we take a break, Theon. Now, we all learned Theon's superpower. He can take a shot to the crotch and laugh it off. Who knew that was beneficial, what he went through?
Well, I think part of the thing with Theon and this scene is that one of the things he's learned is that he can take a beating. He can take pain.
He can
take and a beating. It's nothing compared to where he's been. So that's one of the things he learned in that is like, what are you going to do to me?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get up and keep coming. There's nothing you could do. Yeah. So I actually was, I mean, happy about that scene because I was kind of sick of his character and where it's been
right
for a long time. And I was upset when he jumped out of the boat and left his sister. So the idea that Theon is like going back and he's going to try to kill Euron and rescue his sister, I'm all in. Great. Do it. I love it.
Well, the thing I'm happy about is I love Yara. And so anything that gets Yara back and out of Euron's nasty clutches is fine with me. And if it means that we get a nice, in one of the six episodes to come, we get a nice bit of closure where Theon kills Euron somehow. I don't know how, but somehow. Mm. And rescues Yara. And like, I'm Theon of Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you. When he opens up the cell, you know?
Yeah.
And aren't you a little short for an Iron Islander? And he rescues her. That'll be awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Because, yeah, I mean, I was telling my wife while we were watching, I'm like, the thing about Theon is I've seldom seen a character that I'm both repelled and disgusted by and yet kind of rooting for at the same time, you know?
Well, I hope that he, you know, that he's on the way back up at this point and he's become a better person and he goes out and saves his sister and kills Euron and becomes king of the Iron Islands and brings their fleet and their army to help fight in the north. Like, I think that's where he's going.
Yeah.
I think that's his arc.
And you saw Jon forgave him and said, you're a Stark, basically.
Yes. So I think things. Theon's going to end up in, I think he's going to rescue his sister and go to the north to help fight.
But Yara's going to be the queen. He's not going to be the king. He's already given that up. He's not going to be the king.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll
we'll
be,
see what condition she's in.
He'll be Yara's right hand. Oh, man. Don't say that. Yara's too cool. Let's take a break for a second. We got to thank our sponsors. And our many great sponsors, our patrons on Patreon.com that help keep us on the air. We are no longer part of the Earth Station One network. We now have our own network, the White Rocket Entertainment Network. It's been coming for a while, and it's here now with a number of shows, including On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, Open Wheel, Comics with Normies, and then the main White Rocket show. I feel like I'm forgetting one or two, but we have quite a few shows for different topics, including this sort of partial spinoff where we talk about Game of Thrones. I just haven't made it into its own show because I knew we were going to go like a year and a half now without being able to do any more unless a book comes out. So, but because we have our own network, we need your help to stay on the air. And so for as little as a dollar a month, though we certainly appreciate more, but we're perfectly thrilled to get a dollar a month, you can help support the show and have your name mentioned on the show. And you also get lots of other rewards depending on how much you contribute, just to find out all the stuff you can get. And at the highest level, you actually get every book that White Rocket puts out when it comes out for free. So go to Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com, and just search Plexico. How hard can it be? P-L-E-X-I-C-O. And you'll see the White Rocket and me page. We have to thank, of course, our great sponsors, our great patrons already, Nicholas Cottrell, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrecht, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Randall Walker, Richard Stevens, and our one-time anonymous donor who was awesome, and our newest patron War Damn Wade. So all of you folks, we really appreciate it. You're getting us closer and closer to what we kind of considered our minimum level of sustenance, and we're getting closer to it, and we want to thank you for it. By the way, John, I also have to mention before I forget, it's just a few days now until Dragon Con 2017. This will be my 20th ever Dragon Con, and I think my 8th as a guest of the convention, where they pay me to come down and talk about stuff. I'll have a table in Pop Artist Alley this year. So come by and see Jared and me. Jared will have the table next to me. He'll be doing sketches and selling artwork. I'll be selling my books, and including the big new art book from the Sentinels. And we are at table, I think, 22 and 23 G, I want to say. I can't remember exactly. But there'll be an alphabetical list with a map everywhere you go in there. So that'll be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. It's this Labor Day weekend in Atlanta, in downtown Atlanta. We take over all the big hotels in downtown Atlanta. It'll be like 80,000 people there. John, it'll be right during the Alabama-Florida State game right across the town.
Nice.
Oh, my goodness. So you can come to Dragon Con and see all the weirdos. But enough about the Alabama and Florida State fans. Ba-dum-bum. No, it's a great time, and I'll be doing panels. And one thing I'll be doing is a panel on Game of Thrones. The Fantasy Track is doing a Game of Thrones panel talking about Season 7, and they asked me to be on it. And I'm so excited because it'll be me and I think two or three other people that are big into Game of Thrones, and we will be talking about the show, about the entire season, probably in front of a very large crowd, I'm thinking, in that track, because that's a very popular subject, obviously, at Dragon Con. I wish you could be there, too, because I'm sure you'd have a lot to say on that panel as well. So I'm also doing a panel on Vikings. I'm doing a panel on the Dark Tower. I'm doing several other things, including our Jeopardy tournament. So come on out to Dragon Con. You will not regret it. It is an awesome time. Let's see. John doesn't find out, but other people find out that John is a lost secret Targaryen. What did you think about that? I mean, we knew it already, but what did you think about people finding it out?
Well, I mean, I'm glad we had the real reveal mm-hmm. and not the, you know, the Sam wasn't listening reveal.
Yeah.
And he acted like he found it instead of Gilly found it. But
I was like, wait, what? You weren't even paying attention.
You know, it was a big moment. And but also the revealing that right, you know, when John and Daenerys sleep with each other is, you know, par for the course of the show, I guess. So what do you think it means going forward?
What I think it means going forward, I think it's just one more way to complicate the situation, because as it stood up, all right, in other words, if they're not related, if he really is the son of Ned Stark, which we've known forever he wasn't, right? Since the book, since like for 20 years we've known. But if he was the bastard son of Ned Stark, then he and Dany get together, they get married, she's the queen, he's the prince consort guy, you know, who's like Prince Philip married to Queen Elizabeth, and everything is cool. Now you get not like a sibling rivalry, but in a way, kind of, you know, it's aunt and nephew. At least it's a family that doesn't have a problem with what they're doing. You know what I mean? But they keep it in the family. It's like they're a bunch of Tennessee fans. But I'm bump. Oh, yeah. No offense, Tennessee fans. I guess I should Alabama. But offense, Alabama fans. Offense. I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's going to be like a hand grenade that goes off. They're going to be canoodling up tight together, and Sam's going to burst in, and John's going to be like, Sam, give me a hug. And he gets up out of the fur-covered bed in his bathrobe, and Sam's like, no, avert my eyes, no, John, it's your aunt, run away. And he's going to be like, no, that's what I think. What do you think?
I think it doesn't matter, because what did you say earlier in this episode about Jon Snow's character?
Yeah.
He's already bent the knee. So the idea of rivalry and it means nothing.
Okay. I think that the claim to the throne won't mean anything. But I think the family connection thing will make him put his hand to his forehead and go, oh no, I cannot. It would be wrong of me. You know, I think that's the problem. I think it's the family thing more than the heir to the throne thing. Danny might have more of a problem, honestly, with the heir to the throne thing.
Well, I mean, to me, it pushes them toward they're going to get married. Like, that's where this has been going. And I think the fact that he's, basically equal to her now makes the marriage thing make more sense.
You think they wouldn't have gotten married before?
I mean... If there's nobody out there that she's going to get some big political gain from marrying other than him. So
yeah.
I felt like it was kind of always headed that direction, obviously. Right. So I think this is just going to reinforce it.
I just don't see why you make such a big deal about him being who he is and you set it up for years and years and you tease it out and play it out. And then it just kind of goes and they do the same thing they would have done anyway.
No. It doesn't make a big deal in terms of the succession. It makes a big deal because there's another dragon left, and it's going to be his now.
Well, I know. And it's even the one named after his father.
Yes, he's going to ride Rhaegal. That's 100% going to happen.
But, and by the way, I nearly jumped out of my seat when we saw Rhaegar finally. That was awesome. I mean, I know he just kind of looked like a third-rate elf from the Lord of the Rings movies, but still, we saw Rhaegar and what's her name? Lyssa or whoever?
Leanna.
Leanna, whatever, yeah. That was so cool. I mean, now all I want to do is see him fighting a young version of Robert. I mean, I wish we could get a flashback of that, because that's like the iconic battle scene in history, in recent history in the show, in the books, and we've never really seen it other than in paintings. There's like two classic paintings that they've done from this story that we've never seen that I love. One is Jaime sitting on the Iron Throne after he's killed the Mad King. There's a great painting of that where he's just kicked back like, oh yeah, he's like Loki, you know, in Asgard, mm-hmm. just like, oh, it's me, baby, I'm here, you know, before Ned comes in and like, get your butt down, boy. And then the other one is Robert and Rhaegar battling with the hammer and the sword in the trident. They're standing in the water. I think that's the frontispiece of the big guide to the Ice and Fire book, that big art cover. Oh, it's a fantastic picture. Fantastic. So, okay, so I'm on record. Let me just go ahead and be on record as saying I think it's going to cause more problems and more complications. I don't think it's just going to help things. I think it's going to hurt things. Not necessarily from the political standpoint as much as John just cannot live with. I think he's going to go all Oedipus on us. He may not put his eyes out, but I think he's going to go all Oedipus on us and be like, oh, woe is me. I cannot marry my aunt. It's too wrong. I'm going to go live as a monk somewhere.
I think if there's problems, it's going to be more like the northern people. Some of them may not want to follow John after that.
Yeah, that's fair. And then you'll have the scene where Sansa or somebody says, you know him for who he is, not for who he's supposed to be, and you followed him because of who he is, and he's still who he was, you know?
That's right.
All right, let's see. We talked a little bit about Bran. Anything else about Bran? We had a note.
Well, I mean, just that he was either terrible this season or missing in action this season for episodes at a time. Yeah. And he did have a good comeback, this episode with the with the marriage reveal and talking to Sam about that, and also with the Littlefinger scene where he describes Littlefinger, holding that knife to Ned Stark's throat.
Yeah, his character arc this season, I described him as Mr. Spock earlier, and he's very much Mr. Spock from Star Trek The Motion Picture, where, like, first he's just coldly logical, and everybody's like, hey, man, Spock, you're back. And he's just like, let us proceed with the mission, you know. He's been that way. And so I'm hoping that by the time it's all over, we get Bran saying, I am and always will be your friend. You know, we need yeah. that. We need that bringing him back being a little less robotic.
I just want him and Sam teaming up as the brains behind the operation. That's what I want.
The guy in the chair. Literally.
Yeah.
From Spider-Man Homecoming. That was the line where the guy kept saying, I want to be the guy in the chair, like the guy that, in the headquarters, in the secret room. All right. Well, before we get to the very last scene of the very last episode, have we missed anything? Let me see. Oh, yeah, we did. Cersei says she's going to take all that money, and she sent Euron with a bunch of money. Now, I'm thinking, A, you just sent Euron off in ships with all your money. You never see in Euron or your money ever again.
No. The money was already at the bank.
Okay. He just got the line of credit.
Yes. He's got a traveler's check.
He's got a traveler's check that she can revoke at any moment. I can see Euron is over in like one of the cities of the East, and he's trying to go into a brothel, and he whips out his ye old Westerosi Iron Bank card, and they reject it. I'm sorry, sir, your card has been rejected. And a little picture of Cersei going comes up on the screen. So he's going to hire the Golden Company. John, tell us what the Golden Company is. I know nothing. I'm like Jon Snow. I know nothing of this.
Okay. Here's the 2-minute version. The Golden Company is a mercenary company on Essos, which is the other continent, the one where Daenerys was for a long time.
Right.
And they are composed mostly of Westerosi exiles, a lot of whom are bastard Targaryens.
Ooh.
There's a whole branch of the Targaryen house that at one point called the Blackfyre Targaryens, Blackfyre. That are the bastards.
The Blackfyre
and
Targaryens.
At one point, there was a king who was crazy and who legitimized them all, which meant there was suddenly, instead of like his regular children, there was all these bastard Targaryens that were now, some of whom had precedence and stuff. And so it caused this huge war. And a lot of the Blackfyre rebels and their supporters went and formed this mercenary company after they lost. And so they're the best mercenary company in Essos. The deal is they don't break contracts, unlike the other ones that are kind of sleazy we've seen. Once they take a contract, they're good. And they're very much like a regular Westerosi army, one of the great houses would have. They're disciplined and organized, and they have, you know, cavalry and infantry and archers and stuff. And so they know what they're doing. But at the same time, so she took the gold from
the
Highgarden and paid back the loans they had taken out from the Iron Bank. At the same point, that therefore their credit rating basically was restored, and the Iron Bank was like, hey, you need some money for food or to hire mercenaries, we'll give it to you. And so then she borrowed money again to hire this mercenary company. I think it's while they're historically don't break their contract, depending on mercenaries, I think is a bad idea. And I really think this could be one of those Cersei short-sighted decisions that comes back to bite her in the butt.
Do you think they have anti-dragon artillery?
Kyburn does.
Since they are Targaryens, they might.
No, I don't think they do, but I think Kyburn's going to give it to them.
Right. Well, do you think that stuff will end up being used against the ice dragon, the zombie dragon?
I don't know.
I think
it's going to be dragon on dragon aerial combat against the ice dragon.
Air power. All right. 2-on-1 though. Still, I'm going to be real upset if we lose another dragon one way or another, and I feel like it might happen. I guess we can't because John has to have it to ride on or whatever. But still, I'm glad they're not the backfire Targaryens, because they can only shoot backwards, and who needs that? The Golden Company. We haven't seen them at all, have we, on the show?
No. And so, there's a whole plot thing in the book where there's a fake Targaryen, basically. We believe he's fake, that he's supposedly one of the Targaryen children that was killed by the mountain, escaped, and they raised him in secret, and now he shows up at the Golden Company with his advisors, and they head to Westeros to restore him. And I think he's fake, but in the books, the Golden Company does come to the continent and start taking back like the Stormlands around where Storm's End is.
Huh. So they're already there in the books.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But not with Cersei. So I could see a situation in the books where maybe this guy gets killed or unmasked as a fake, and then Cersei hires them. I could see that. Okay. Because they're already there.
That way you don't need Euron and all the ships, because that's probably not going to happen in the books. Not that way. Again, this is, you can see the TV writers just moving the chess pieces around the way they need them to be moved.
I did like Euron leaving, and I didn't see that part of the double cross.
Right. No, I thought he's so crazy and erratic and nuts, he would just say screw it and leave.
Yeah, so I liked that part.
Yeah, that was good. I wasn't even sure at first that Cersei was telling the truth when she told Jaime that he had done that. I'm like, she's just saying that to cover for her own, you know, mess up. But I guess it was true.
No, I mean, she was planning to betray them the whole time. I believe that. So.
Right. Yeah, that's why she sent him. But, okay, well, the thing I was going to say about the Golden Company is they haven't been introduced yet. So in season 8, you've got 6 episodes to completely introduce them, make us care at all about them, and then hopefully defeat them. And the thing of it, and they may all go over to the Targaryens when they find out that there's a Targaryen. Who knows?
Yes.
And I would say that was impossible, except that they introduced Euron and made us hate his guts in like 2 episodes. So I guess it is possible.
I guess. I mean, it's also like maybe they're like, hey, we didn't sign up to fight dragons, man.
Yeah. Or our relatives or whatever. Yeah. Especially with John having that connection.
It's true.
Yeah, it's interesting. Let's see. John and Danny do it. We talked about that. Theon, Littlefinger's toast.
In terms of the Littlefinger thing, not as many people died this season as I expected.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of killing next season, though.
Well, obviously. But, I mean, out of all the major – going into this season, how many major characters are dead from the start of this season? Just Littlefinger?
The Sand Snakes and their mom, but they're not really major.
The Sand Snakes and their mom, yeah.
Queen of Thorns. But, I mean,
yeah, Olenna Tyrell, that was a big one. But
yeah, not many.
And that's what I'm saying. I think a lot of people would have guessed many more.
One of the dragons. So. Well, kind of. He's back in different shape.
He's dead.
Well, he's dead, yeah. What do you think about Jon's name being Aegon? Is that reference to anything like Duncan Egg or Aegon the Conqueror? Or is he the Aegon the Conqueror reborn? Or
I got to think about that one. I don't know.
All right. Okay, lastly, our Wyndham Hotel spokesmodel, what's his name? With the red hair, likes...
Tormund.
Tormund, yeah. Tormund Giantsbane. Tormund and his crowd are up there as the new Night's Watch, which is hilarious enough. And they see the army of the dead come up with the dead giants and everything. And the wall has stood for 8,000 years, but now the Night King has dragon technology. Did you, A, see the Night King flying on the dragon? Did you expect that? I guess we did, right?
Oh, 100%. As soon as they stuck the chain in the ice, I was like, you know where this is going.
And when you ask me where did they get those chains, my answer is the same answer when they asked Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross what his name is, okay? If you don't know, go rent Glengarry Glen Ross. Look for Alec Baldwin. They ask him what his name is. He'll tell you what his name is. That's my answer when you ask where the chains came from. They came from Craster's Home Depot, okay? That's where they came from. Don't worry about it. Did you expect the dragon could just blast the wall down? I thought it was going to be a little more complicated than that.
No, but once he started doing it, I was like, it's fine. Great. I don't get why the ice breath thing did that.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be like the force of it blowing holes in the wall or whatever. And I'm like, that's fine.
Dissolving the spells, right? Surely.
Yes, I guess. And also like physically like knocking out – the wall was kind of semi-fragile in a sense, right? And it's literally like concussive force knocking out big pieces of it, causing it to collapse.
Yeah.
I was a little like, what did they do it? And then I was like, I'm fine with it because, again, the great thing is at the end of last season, we had Daenerys on the ships with the Dothraki, with the dragons, with their all her soldiers and her advisors and riding in that great scene. And this year we get the wall falling and the Night King on the dragon and his guys marching into the north in that great scene.
Am I crazy, though, or couldn't they have just blasted the tunnel open and walked through single file? And who could have stopped them?
That's not nearly as dramatic, man.
I know. I guess, you know what? I guess the spells, though, in the wall would have kept them from doing that. They'd have probably exploded like they did in the tree.
This destroys that part of the wall as, you know, as anything useful. And it's kind of one of those things like once they're past it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Ardennes, the Maginot Line.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. I think that the wall was more a marker for where the spells were than it really was a physical barrier to keep them out.
Well, I think the physical barrier was, again, there's two different groups, okay? The White Walkers are like the Night King and his guys that are, you know, and then there's the zombie types, okay? Mm-hmm. And the wall itself was for the zombie types to fight them off because I think they could climb it and they could try and fight it, but the spells were to protect against the Night King and his buddies.
Yeah. Because the dragon could have just, they could have ferried 10 or 12 over at a time and just carried them over if they were impatient enough.
That would have been really boring.
I'm saying, I think they would have exploded if they tried to pass the wall before it was knocked down.
I agree. And that's why I love that scene. It needed to happen. Because again, as long as the wall's standing, the threat is still theoretical.
Yeah. That's right.
Now we're going to have castles in the north that they're wiping out.
I kept saying, as long as the wall is there, why is Jon wetting his pants that these guys are coming? But yeah, now, I mean, because it always just seemed like it would have been funny if they'd come up to the wall and gotten stuck there. And then Jon's running around the south going, the dead are coming, the dead are coming. Oh my God, we got all team up. And they all go up there and they're just like standing there on the other side of the wall like, well, we can't get any further. We're kind of stuck, guys. And then the other armies would be like, John, why did we bust our butts to come up here? They're just standing there because of the wall technology that's standing here, you know? Why did we hurry, come running up here? These dudes are just standing there. If it not for the dragon, they'd still be standing there. So that really was the dumbest plan of all time, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wow. Holy cow. All right. Anything else before we look at maybe predictions for what's coming up and do some listener questions?
Now let's do that.
All right. What do you think is going to happen in the last six episodes? And it's not next year. It's next season because it could be 2019.
Please don't. I read that stuff and I'm like, just come on.
Think about this. Both Avengers 3 and 4 could be out by the time we see the next season.
I think it's going to be like late fall next 2018. So here's my predictions. Winterfell under siege.
Yeah.
I see aerial battles 2-on-1 with the dragons with Jon riding Rhaegar.
That's got to be close to the end, though. That can't be too soon.
I see some White Walker and some zombies making an end run to the south.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I just see it like the idea that they're only going to stay up there. It's snowing in King's Landing. I see a White Walker and some zombies showing up in the south and starting to spread.
Kind of like General MacArthur landing at Inchon.
Yeah. No, I think I mean, they just need one guy to go down there and start infecting, you know, raising dead bodies and infecting people. And boom, they got a whole other army in the south. And Cersei's, you know, going to have problems.
Tell me this. Who gets defeated definitively first, the Night King or Cersei? Or maybe Cersei marries the Night King.
No.
I mean, there's your what? Pair, right? Dany and Jon versus Cersei and the Night King.
I'm going to say the Night King is defeated first.
Yeah. I've always said that. That's my Babylon 5 theory, right? That you beat the shadows before you beat President Clark. because a human being is more satisfying to beat than just a force of nature. And no matter how evil and scary the Night King and his crowd are, they're abstract forces like a hurricane. They're not human beings. I mean, it'll be more satisfying when they take down Cersei, and won't it?
Yes, it will be. There's still a lot of predictions of who will kill Cersei. I mean, either Jaime or Tyrion, it's going to be 100% one of them.
It's got to be one of them, sure.
And I really think now maybe Jaime them parting.
He's the little brother, right?
Yeah.
Who's the prince or princess that was promised?
It's Jon Snow.
You don't think it's like the child of Dany and Jon?
Good gosh. We're not doing a whole other generation of this thing. I think it's Jon and Daenerys are the both of those things. I mean, again, it's the Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the name of the books.
The name of the game.
And so I think it is, you know, about them and their relationship, but also about Jon as a person, because he is ice and fire. I mean, he's the Targaryen that was raised as a Stark that, you know, was Ward Commander of the Night's Watch and all that. So I think it's him.
Yeah.
But I think only by them together can they save the world or whatever. So
he's got quite a resume. He's like 23 or something, right, on the character. He's already been Lord Commander of the Night Watch, King of the North, and he's a Targaryen heir. He's done everything to be the head of the CIA.
He's killed how many White Walkers? I mean, he killed
more than anybody else.
One at Hardhome, and he killed one in the little ambush by the campfire.
Yeah, and he almost gave that sword away too. I'm like, dude, it's a nice thing to do. If you all survive this and get back down below the wall, then you give Jorah the sword back. You know what I mean? It's like you're on the way to battling creatures that can only be killed with either dragon glass or the sword you're carrying. You don't offer it to somebody else. Oh my gosh!
All right. We got some great listener questions.
Let's do it.
First question from Auburn Elvis.
Yay.
He says, Night King's plan to get past the wall. Lazy plan or laziest plan ever? Seriously? Wait 2,000 years to reanimate a dragon? That's it?
Well, if he had the whole thing planned in terms of luring them up there. Maybe.
And maybe only, like you're saying, the dragon breath could cancel out the spells and destroy the wall.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to think if it was all his plan, it would have been neat if they found a little note in John's room in Winterfell, like, Dear John, please come up here and capture a White Walker. But it's signed not the King, Night King. Somebody else entirely.
It's funny because you're talking about the point of view chapters, and there aren't point of view chapters from the Night King.
Right.
So we really don't know like what he thinks or how he acts.
And the point of view chapters are famous for making you like the character they're about, even if you already hated him, right? Because you went through like half of book one. Everybody that talked about Jaime Lannister hated him. He's the devil. He's horrible. He's terrible. And then you get to the Jaime chapters and you're like, hey, Jaime's pretty cool. I like Jaime. And so I guess the only character that's not like that is Cersei. You read Cersei's chapters and you still hate her. But I'm just trying to imagine, the Night King's chapter where he's like, the Night King stopped and petted a small puppy dog. You know, the Night King made macaroni and cheese for his closest friends.
Death.
Yeah, that's the whole chapter. Death. That's the whole chapter. You turn the page and it's just more death. It's like Jack Nicholson in The Shining wrote it. Death.
Like, it's cold here.
It's very cold.
Russell, I've got another question. This is from Russell.
I hope John gets here soon and brings that dragon. Cold, death, cold.
This is from Russell. He says, what is it with Targaryens and incest?
No kidding. Well, I mean, I think that the Targaryens thought only they were good enough for them. Okay. And then I think that Dany and Jon just, I mean, it was natural that they'd be attracted to each other. But Yeah, it really does play into the family stereotype. It'd be funny if Danny's like, we are not, that is a stereotype. That is a stereotype. We do not commit incest all the time. That is not true. And you're like, then somebody whispers here, ma'am, we just found out that John is a Targaryen. Dang it!
All right. Now, our next question is from Earl at Prowler 01. Yeah. What will be the fallout of John being a Targaryen? Will he and Danny end it or say roll tide and move in together?
This is some good stuff.
He went with the joke that you were going for.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Next question from Emily Rios, who says, what are the chances that Danny is pregnant next season and Cersei never was? She says, I think it's pretty high.
I think they both are now.
I think the Cersei thing is a lie. I don't. I think she was manipulating Jaime.
I don't think
she's pregnant.
Here's why: because Tyrion figured it out without her saying it. Did she want Tyrion to figure it out? Was that part of her evil plan? She didn't drink. You noticed she didn't drink the wine, and then she was kind of like poking her stomach.
When she was talking about protecting things that are important, yeah, I get it. But I think she's smart enough to manipulate both of them. I don't buy it.
This is the season Tyrion got the dumb.
Yeah, he was.
He's had a bad season 7.
He has not come out shining in gold. I'll tell you that.
Even when he redeemed himself at the end of this episode, it turned out to be a double cross anyway, and he fell right into it.
Well, this is a good Tyrion question from Johnny Dent, who says, what went down with Tyrion and Cersei? Why was Tyrion creeping outside the door of Dany and Jon? Please tell me we're not going to have evil Tyrion next season.
No. I think Tyrion is very protective of Dany, very concerned with sort of managing her. He's almost like her manager, like she's, you know, some pop singer or something. And he's trying to manage her. And I'm not sure he was thrilled that Danny and John were getting together. I think he knew that's what was going on. And I think he was standing out there kind of like, oh, I don't know. I can't really barge in there and say anything. She'll set me on fire. But on the other hand, I kind of want to. I think that's kind of what it was. Is that how you read it?
Do you think part of it, I think it's that, and I think like everybody else, he's in love with her.
Oh, Jesus. Everybody gets near Danny, falls in love with her. I don't know.
So I think it's that, but I think it's also like he's thinking about what does this mean in the big picture for him and for Danny's plans or whatever.
That's all it is.
A follow-up question from the Toad Father, who says, what was up with Tyrion working outside the door while Danny and Jon were solidifying their alliance?
Solidifying their alliance, right. Yeah, no, I do. I think it's just that Tyrion worries about everything she does. And you know, if Varys had been there, he'd have been next to him, wringing his hands and fretting as well. It just, you know, they just they're worried that she's making a mistake or something. I don't know.
Johnny Dent has a follow-up thing. It says three heads were supposed to be Jon, Dany, and Tyrion, which is the popular theory about three heads has the dragon, they each ride a dragon. We thought maybe it was done and when one died, but maybe evil Tyrion goes with the White Walker dragon.
No.
All right. Tim Davis says, I assumed he was talking about, you already had a discussion with him about the incest. All right, Josh at the Blipster says, will John and Danny's baby be the princess that was promised, fulfilling the prophecy of bringing light back to the realm?
Well, that's what I was suggesting a minute ago, and you shot that one down, so.
No, I think they can't wait till this kid's old enough to fight the war. It's got to happen.
That's like it's 1977, and we're talking about episode 9.
Yeah. No, it's now that kid may be on the throne at the end of this whole thing. I don't know, but no, I just want to step back for a second with all this happy ending talk. I don't assume that any of these characters are going to live. It's George R. Martin. Okay. So we talked about predictions earlier. I want to come back to this. I am not under any assumptions that there's a happy ending at the Lord of the Rings kind of scene at the end of this where Jon and Dany are married and Arya and Sansa are there and, you know, looking good and Jaime and Tyrion are there drinking with Bronn and all. I think most of those characters will be dead.
Well, it's interesting how they said they were alternating endings because, like they said, I think two seasons ago, the last scene was a downer. Maybe. I can't remember what the last scene of season five was. The last scene of season six was Danny and everybody on the ships coming to Westeros, which was awesome. I loved that scene because we'd waited for it so long. So they said that because they ended last season on kind of an upper note, they wanted to end this season on the wall getting knocked down by and the walkers coming through. So does that mean next season ends on a high note again? Again, we're not on George R. R. Martin's script. I know you think that he's written them a firm roadmap, but I think he took out a napkin and scribbled.
A high note is relative. Again, I think you know that many characters are going to die. I do not assume that all your favorite characters are going to make it. Like they made it through this season. I think it's going to be bad.
I think in the books, nearly everybody's going to die. But I think on the – let's put it this way. I think in the books, Jaime is dead. I think on the TV show, I think there's a chance Jaime might live.
All right. Well, let's do this. I'm going to run down the list of characters and tell you what I – you want me to tell you what I think is going to happen?
Yeah. Let's go back and forth. Go.
All right. Cersei.
Dead.
100% dead. Jaime.
I think he's going to live.
Dead.
So you're thinking you're thinking with your book and not with your TV, John.
Well, but it's not just that. It's that who is Jaime the character? He believes he's a knight. He's going to do what he can to protect the realm, and I think he probably he's going to kill Cersei and maybe die right after that. But I think he's not going to okay. Jon Snow,
live.
He's dead.
He's already dead.
Yeah, he's going to be dead again.
He got better.
Danny.
Lives.
I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, I'm painting a dark picture, but this is where I see it going.
If John and Danny don't live, what was the point of the entire show?
That they saved the world and made it a better place?
Yeah, well, small potatoes. I want them to live. And be cool and fly around on dragons and stuff.
Okay, well, that would be nice.
Sail into the west with Frodo. Arya?
I don't know.
Books dead, TV alive. This is what I mean. Sansa lives.
Okay. Sansa's going to live.
Yeah. Tyrion?
Lives.
Yeah.
But this is maybe more me hoping than because I want him to live. I don't know if he's going to.
Davos.
He's going to die.
I think he lives. I don't think as many people are going to die on the show as you would think because it's not the books anymore. If it was the books, yes, but I don't think it's the books anymore. And I think they're going to give the fans what they want. They've been doing it for 2 years now.
I think. The stakes,
except for the fans that don't want the story to be too dumb.
The stakes have to be real.
Yeah.
Next year, and you have to be afraid for the characters that you really truly care about. And for that to happen, they're gonna have to kill some of these other people.
That's true.
It's gonna happen.
That's true. All right. Anybody else? What about Brienne? I think she.
I think Tormund and Brienne are probably both going to die, but
I think they'll get together.
Maybe they get together and then die. Okay, how about that for a prediction?
Yeah, maybe. I think you're thinking with your book and not with your TV.
Well, but see, what if Jaime shows up? You could have a Jaime Tormund Brienne love triangle.
Bow chicka bucka wow! But it is HBO. To be fair, that is true. I don't think she. I don't know what she wants. I don't think she wants anything. Oh, all right. What about Braun? This is fun game.
I was so disappointed he did not ride north of Jaime. That's the one thing I thought when Jaime was riding away. It's like, where's Braun?
Where did he go? What? Where is he?
He's in the city with Cersei.
Oh, jeez.
Leading the Lannister army.
He's not going to stick around with her. He has too much fun insulting Jaime and getting away with it.
Well, I don't think Cersei will trust him now. So I think Bronn, the minute he hears Jaime took off, I think he's going to run.
Yeah, I hope so. He's too cool of a character to... The Hound dies when he kills the Mountain, or he kills the Mountain and lives happily ever after? I think he's got to die.
He's going to die, but he's going to kill the Mountain first, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I can't think of anybody else offhand that I want to know if they live or die. There's no Baratheons left other than Gendry. Who cares? I think that's pretty much it.
Gendry?
Oh, he lives, because who cares? I don't think they take the time to kill him. I think there's not going to be enough time.
Why bring him back? I just don't understand that.
So like, he could use his marathon running skills to go all the way back to the wall and alert them and the need to send a telegraph message to Danny.
Just so they brought him back just so they could do that rowing joke.
Well, we know that. I mean, they've admitted that the reason they brought him back was to give Davos something to do while Tyrion is talking to Jaime. That was it.
Yep.
They've said so.
I agree. And also, like, you know, then they show in the preview the Hound is using his hammer in the battle, and it makes you think he's dead and stuff. So, yeah. I don't know.
Any other listener questions?
No, that's it.
All right. So we've put a bow on season 7. What would you rate this season? A+, A all the way down to F, compared to the others, and how much you enjoyed it?
I mean, season 6 was an A+. Okay. You know, season 1, I think, was an A+. And this season was a B-. I mean, I like it better than, like, you're talking about the seasons that were really depressing. Five. But I don't like it. I don't think it's one of the best 2 or 3 seasons. How about that?
Season 5 was a D-.
Yeah, no, that was – I could really do without another – and that's what I'm thankful they haven't gone there with Yara.
Yeah.
Like, I was worried we were going to have scenes of Euron torturing her. And I'm like, we don't need any more of that. Good gosh.
Absolutely not. I'm going to give this season an A. I'm not giving it an A+, just because the contrived nature of some of the stuff, including the journey to the north, into the polar bear, give him a dragon journey, was contrived in the extreme. That takes off the plus. But everything else, I'm just happy that good stuff is happening, and that goes a long way with me.
Amen to that. And also, like, where's Ghost? Come on.
Where is Ghost? Dang it.
He's at Winterfell hanging out.
He is. I think he should have attacked Littlefinger immediately. I think that what it came down to was, if Ghost had been around all season, he would have gone north with them. And if he went north with them, I don't think he could have ridden on the dragon.
I think you're right.
And so they said, we have to just
well,
not.
Well, and John would never bring him to Dragonstone, because they're not going to let a dire wolf on the island.
No, you know? you're right. Yeah, Ghost just didn't fit in this season anywhere. He couldn't go on the ship. He couldn't go in Dragonstone. It's just one of these things where they visited hotels that had no pet policy this year.
So the question is he going to show up next year?
He's in a pet motel in the north.
And do any of the other, like, does Nymeria ever come back?
No. I think we'll see Ghost again. I don't think we're going to see any of the others.
Okay.
I think we'll see Ghost, like, twice.
See, I always thought that, and this may still happen in the books, I always thought that Arya's wolf Nymeria would save her someday.
And in the books, it may very well happen that way, but they just didn't have time to go into all that. I think... It's going to be like they were saying, somebody was saying a while back when Ghost disappeared for a long time. Like, you'll be in the middle of a battle and Ghost comes running up and starts fighting. And John's like, where have you been? And Ghost is like, there was a rabbit, ran way over there. I've been chasing him, you know.
And Ghost is like, they ran out of CG budget.
Yeah. Yeah. What can I do, man? I'm CGI. All right. Well, I guess that'll put a capper on Game of Thrones talk for a little while now. We're going to have to talk about other things. So like I said, folks, if you want to hear us talk about other fascinating topics, we do James Bond, We do racing. We do regular, all kind of stuff on the White Rocket Show. You can just look at our archives and subscribe through iTunes. Leave us a review. You can just go to Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, and follow us there. But we'd appreciate anything you can do. And, of course, our you can sponsor us through Patreon at P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/FanAllenPlexico. John, that's going to do it. What do we say to death?
Not today.
Not this season.
All right.
See you later.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.